زهرا یا زهرا یا زهرا یا زهرا یا زهرا
followers of Ahlul Bayt also. We're not free from this fitna. We are not free from this fitna. This fitna is really a part of our world also. Because you see this, in your own life you have seen and you have existed, and I don't need to give proofs, but I will just mention something that you can relate to. Tell me, when you hear about different speakers speak from the member, and they are speaking about Islam, they are speaking from the hadith of Ahlul Bayt, and they reach not just two, but tens of different conclusions. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. You see them reaching different conclusions. You hear one alim speak about this thing, and then you know you hear another alim speak about the completely opposite thing. One is saying that we should be like Imam Musa, and the other is saying that we should be like Imam Hassan. And then you're like wondering, was there a difference between Imam Hassan and Imam Musa? Is there a difference of opinion amongst them? You see, understand this. We are hearing all kinds of things from the member. We are hearing all kinds of things from speakers. So now when we look at these things, how do we decide what is the true Islam? How do we come to that conclusion? And just to make this real, because I don't want to make it hard on the first day. Right. On the first day, I'll take it easy. Right. We'll take it easy a little bit, right? So that you can get used to it. I don't want to bring out the hard hadith and the hard-hitting facts right away. Right? So that you can really get into the subject as to what I'm saying. My friends, this issue that I'm speaking about is something that is puzzling all of our minds every time. We have different people who are Shias, and they all say different things. And we have different ulama who are Shias, who have difference of opinion in so many different things. How would we know what is right? This is something that we need to understand. Did Allah, did Ahlul Bayt give us methods and ways to recognize the truth from falsehood or not? If there are those ways that we can use and say, okay, according to this litmus test, this is wrong. Is there something like that or not? Or did they leave us and say, well, too bad, you're in a fix. Solve it yourself. See, really we need to imagine, and what would we give to learn about those things that Ahlul Bayt have given by which we can recognize the truth from falsehood? Not all knowledge is the same. Not all knowledge is the same. Some knowledge is key, some knowledge is useful. But some knowledge is key, meaning those things that can help me decide between right and wrong, this is a fundamental knowledge. Something that I want to have in order that I can look at this issue and see what is the right side of this issue. What would we give to know this? This is really something that we need to decide. And if you think that it's worth it, then I will lay the price down. And you give me the price, and I'll tell you. If this is worth it for you, then give the best thing that you can. Send the salawats.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
These, there are different brands of Islam that have been manufactured. You know, Islam in the beginning, you had a real Islam and then you had the manufactured Islam. There were factories of Islamic ideology being, you know, like manufacturing knockoffs. Wherever there's something real, there's going to be a knockoff, right? There's going to be something that's fake. If the real is not there, then the fake won't be there, right? And that's why you have, you know, big corporations making up Islam. You know, you had the Abu Huraira Incorporated in the past, and now you have many other incorporations that are making up Islam, that are bringing out these things and making it available for you. In fact, when you look at it, and when I looked at what's available on the web, what's available on Facebook, what's available on all these social medias, what I saw was that more of fake Islam is accessible to people than real Islam. Fake knowledge is more accessible to those who go on social medias and want to find out than real knowledge is. That is the reality. Now, how can we save ourselves in this regard? As I said, you know, it's just going to be an introduction today, because I do want to speak about Hazrat Fatima al-Zahra alayhi salam. But when we look at the history of Islam, my friends, the issue of Islam, the issue of Allah and the Quran was never religion versus no religion. Read the Quran, read it thoroughly, and see for yourself that Allah is not talking about people or emphasizing about people who don't believe at all and say that there is no God. You see, the emphasis is not there. In fact, when you look at the enemies of Allah and the enemies of Islam, you see that they had a religion. They believed in something. They were not atheist. And as a matter of fact, so I can make this statement for you and you can ponder over this, Shaitan was not an atheist. Shaitan was somehow and in somewhat fashion a believer. He knew who Allah was and he was a religious person. How do you become a religious person? I mean, how do you recognize a religious person? A religious person is someone who prays and someone who makes dua, right? It's a religious person, someone who does ibadah and someone who makes dua. Shaitan prayed and he prayed a lot. He prayed for 6,000 years. We haven't even prayed for 60 years yet. 6 years of prayer, that's a lot. 6 hours and we are tired. Isn't that the case? I mean, we see that. Laylatul Qadr, how long do you pray? And then after 6 hours of prayer, we, you know, we exit the masjid, patting ourselves on the back. Good boy. Way to go. And here's Shaitan who prayed for 6,000 years. So Shaitan prays and he also makes dua. Even when he's kicked out of Jannat, when he was kicked out of Jannat, who did he ask? Who did he ask from? He asked from Allah, Allah, give me time until a known day. Who is he asking from, this Shaitan, this dua he's making? He's making dua to Allah. So he's a religious dude. He's a religious person, isn't he? This is what Shaitan is. And even now Allah says and testifies in the Quran, Allah testifies regarding Shaitan. And he says about Shaitan that when he misguides people, when he comes to us and misguides us, and then we get misguided. And when we do get misguided and do something wrong, you know what Shaitan does? He says, "Inni bari'un minkum. Ana bari'un minkum. I am free of you. I have nothing to do with you."
Inni akhafullah rabbul alameen. I am afraid of Allah, the Lord of the universe. Shaitan is saying this. I'm afraid of Allah. I'm not like you. I'm afraid of Allah. I just misguide you. I don't do those sins. I just misguide you. You see, I'm afraid of Allah. Who's making these statements in the Quran? Shaitan is. My friends, Shaitan has a religion. It's a corrupted religion. It's not right, but he does have a religion. He has an ideology, a belief. He's an enemy of Allah, enemy of Islam and mankind. Let me give you some other examples if you give salawats. The people, even nowadays, when you look at it, when even people who don't believe in religion talk about religion, they talk with respect. We have to be very careful to understand what is true and what is not. Sometimes, for example, with the way they come off, is very, very smart. Let's look at some of these statements that I've heard, and I'm sure you have heard. Now they said that, you know, this is how they will say it. You have to give it to Muhammad. He is a great man. He is an amazing person. Right? To have written a book like the Quran, he has to be a genius. And we are like, oh, he's praising the Prophet. He's not praising the Prophet at all. All he's saying is that the Quran is fabricated. It's man-made. That's what he's saying. But he's saying it in a way that is very impressive. On one hand, he said, oh, you see, this person is praising the Prophet. Why? Because he's saying he's a genius. For doing what? For making up the Quran. Did the Prophet make up the Quran? Understand? No, he didn't. He didn't make up the Quran. That's not his book. This is a revelation. He had nothing to do with writing it. Now when he said that, you see, this is how they come off. When they come off like that, we now are looking at this, and if a person is not smart, he will be able to be fooled by such talk. It's very important that we recognize how those people who are making up religion and making up a false brand of Islam come across us. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. These confusions that we have between right and wrong, between the different brands of Islam, is not a new thing. I want to just let you know that it's not a new thing, because Allah mentions it in the Quran as one of the reasons why Rasulullah came. Why did he come? He mentions this as a reason. When you look at the ayat of the Quran, he says, "Alladhina yattabi'una ar-rasula an-nabiyya al-ummi alladhi yajidunahu maktuban indahum fit-tawrati wal-injil," that those who follow the messenger, the prophet, who they found written in the books of the yore, like the Torah and the Injil, who does amr bil ma'ruf and nahi anil munkar, and also does what? Wa yada'u anhum israhum wal ighlal. He unlocks the handcuffs and the chains that they're locked in. One of the job of the Prophet, one of the responsibilities of the Prophet was what? Was to make the chains that we are locked in, the handcuffs that we have on our hand, to unlock them. To free us of that, to liberate us, to let us free. These handcuffs are the wrong ideas that we have regarding Allah and religion. The wrong ideas that we have are these handcuffs that we tie ourselves in. We are believers, we follow, but what happens? Sometimes, because of the fact that we have wrong ideas, it becomes a handcuff for us. We are imprisoned by it. And they came to get rid of these ideas that we have. And they have explained to us how to do that. And that's what I'll try to explain in the next 2 days, as much as I can in regards to this subject, because it's something that we need to know, because you hear so many brands from different places. I'll mention one hadith for you that is strong, so you can get the weight of this issue. You can get the weight of this issue. My friends, I want you to understand this really well, why this is important. And that's why I'm mentioning this hadith today. I told you I won't be hard, but I changed my mind. Send a salawat. There's a hadith that we have in which the Imam is saying that in every generation, every once in a while, so Allah raises from us, meaning from Ahlul Bayt, someone. It could be a Shia, this from us could refer to a Shia, or it could refer to a Sayyid. He says that Allah will raise someone in the eyes of the people. In the eyes of the people, that the Shias will look up to him, would respect him, would know him for his knowledge, for his aura, for his holiness. They will respect him. He will raise them in their eyes. And once he is raised in their eyes and has a rank amongst the believers, amongst the Shias, then Allah will make him go astray. Allah will make him go astray. Who? This great leader or alim or whatever it is. He will make him go astray so that his going astray will become a test for the people. His going astray will become a test for the people. So now when it is a test, imagine this. Now let me explain this so that it really hits home. My friends, really, when a Maulana says something from the member, and we Maulanas, really, we are just students. Right? I'm just a student. So when I say something, you can say, Maulana Beg, you know, says it all the time. That's okay. Right? But really, just because I said it from the member, you'll be like, no, we should still listen to it and respect it, right? Listen, respect it. You have a certain amount of confidence in what is being said. In what's being said. My friends, now just imagine if someone who is greater than I, much greater, someone who you really look up to and follow, if he goes astray, then what happens? The Imam is saying, this is what Allah does. He does this. And he will put this as a trial for believers. So that now see how many believers look at that and they also go astray. And then when this test, this alim dies, then Allah will send another one to do the same thing. And you look at yourself and say, Allah, how am I going to protect myself against that? Really, how can I look at myself, Allah, how can I protect myself against that? I am a nobody. I have a job, 9-to-5 job. I don't know these things that well. If you are saying that you raise ulama and make them great and then make them go astray, how would I know if they have gone astray? Subhanallah. My friends, this is why this subject I'm speaking about is important, to know what is the difference. How do you know the difference of right and wrong? Really, there must be a way, and the Imams have explained this way, and that's what I want to give to you. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Habil was the son of Adam, and Qabil killed him. Right? He killed him. Now this Qabil, was he a non-religious person? You see that Qabil was also a religious person. It's not that Qabil didn't believe in Allah. Qabil believed in Allah. It's just that his sacrifice wasn't accepted. His sacrifice that he made wasn't accepted. Habil's was, and he was upset. He was upset at that. But he wasn't someone who was an atheist who didn't believe in God. No, he believed in God. My friends, the enemies of Islam are not atheists. The enemies of Islam are religious people. The enemies of Islam do have an ideology that they espouse to, do have the belief system inside of themselves. When we look at, for example, the enemies of our Prophet, who do you think they were? People who were atheists or agnostics? You know, like for example, Abu Jahl. If you think of an arch enemy of the Prophet, other than the Munafiqs, who came later, if you think about the arch enemy of the Prophet, you come up with the name of Abu Jahl, right? What issue did Abu Jahl have with the Prophet? You have heard many things about it, right? About Abu Jahl, about the history. Tell me, with all your learning, what issue did Abu Jahl have with the Prophet? Do you really think that it was the idols in the Kaaba? Was that the issue? That he did not worship the idols in the Kaaba, or he spoke out against the idols of the... Do you really care Abu Jahl gives a hoot about the idols? If you read his history, you'll see that no, he has no care for these things. He says, we made them up. We made 360, we will make 1,000 more because we made it. He doesn't care about the idols. That's not the issue of Abu Jahl. Then what was the issue? You see, really, when you look at this, then when you start to see what was his issue, you'll see this person was not an atheist. He was not someone who didn't believe in God. Really, Abu Jahl used to believe in a God. It wasn't Tawheed, but it was a belief in someone greater. He used to make Tawaf of the Kaaba. He used to pray also in his own way, but he did pray. So what was the issue that Abu Jahl had with the Prophet? When we look at the issue that Abu Jahl had with the Prophet, he himself says, he himself mentions this and says that, listen, my issue with the Prophet, my issue with this man is not about he believes in one God or not, any of these things. The issue that Abu Jahl had, he himself says, is that that Bani Hashim, they have the right to the Kaaba, they have the keys to the Kaaba, they serve the Hujjaj, they have the, you know, all these things. All of these faza'il, all of these merits Bani Hashim have, and now if they take Nabuwat, what is left for the rest of us? The issue of Abu Jahl was very petty. He was just saying, we want to share in the action also. You have all of these merits, give us some also. If you take prophethood, what's left for the rest of our tribes? That's it. That's all the issue he had. My friends, we need to recognize right and wrong and know what can be used to recognize it. Tomorrow I'll go and explain more about this. Send a salawat. And obviously today, as I said, I want to speak about someone who has affected our lives, I would say more than anyone else. Yes. Someone who has affected our lives more than anyone else. And that is Hazrat Fatima al-Zahra salamullah alayha. When we look at the reality of Hazrat Fatima, and that's what I want you to look at today. And I want you to understand how you are related to her. How you are related to her reality. Because really, she has affected us, and we need to see the effect that she has on us. You know, just in terms of religion and method, let me say this one hadith that we have from Imam al-Zamana alayhi salatu wasalam. Ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. Imam says, this is our Imam now. He says that when he will reappear, right, when he will reappear and he will establish things and establish Allah's deen, which is a promise of Allah. It is something that is going to happen. It's just a matter of time. When he establishes deen and eradicates oppression, he says, if you want to know my method and how I do things, if you want to know what my stand is and how I will stand, if you want to know the work model of my movement, this is very careful, my friends. I want you to understand this well. Do not look at the Prophet. Do not look at Imam Ali. Do not look at Hassan or Hussein. He says, my role model is Fatima al-Zahra. And I wish I could explain that. That's not my speech. I wish I could explain that. But in brief, I will say this one thing. This one thing, my friends, understand this one thing. Tell me, how did the Prophet deal with the enemies of Islam? Would you say that he was lenient? Or would you say that he was hard on them? He was lenient, right? Look at how he dealt with them, giving them chance after chance after chance. When Imam Ali dealt with his enemies, do you think that Imam Ali was lenient or was he harsh? He was lenient. Wow. Good. 2 out of 2. Right. And look at the other Imams. Do you think that Imam Hassan or Imam Hussein were overtly harsh on their enemies? Or do you think that they were too lenient on them when we look at them? Lenient, giving them chances, giving them time, letting go of them, this and that. Just tell me. Now, when you look at the method of Fatima, in her one interaction with, you can say, the enemies, what was her reaction like? Did she forgive them? Did she forgive them? Or did she say, no, I will not forgive you. Now, I will expose you. I will stand up to your wrong. And I'll stand up so hard that you will be exposed. You see, the one difference we see in Fatima and the Prophet and the Imams in their methodology is this strictness and rigidness. And when Imam Zamana says that my role model is Fatima, then it means that when he will come, there won't be leniency. There won't be leniency. The time for leniency is finished. That's one of the reasons why he's saying that my role model is Fatima. The other thing about Hazrat Fatima is that Allah gave annotations of His message to her through Jibrahil. These annotations that came to the house of Fatima are known as Mushaf-e-Fatima. Mushaf-e-Fatima, the book of Fatima. These annotations of the message that Allah sent in the Quran, that He gave to Fatima. But have you read Mus'haf of Fatima, my friends? Has any one of you read Mus'haf of Fatima? Why not? Very good. Good answer. It's not available. You're right. It is not available. It has never been available. Have you ever thought why it's not unavailable? If it was an important message that we can take advantage of, like Sahifa Sajadiyah is, like Nahjul Balagha and all these things are, so couldn't we take advantage of it? Why did Allah not make it available for us? Why did Allah not make it available for us? Have you ever pondered over that? Because if it's useful, then Allah, you should have let us have it. If it's not useful, then why didn't you even reveal it? Really, what is this Mus'haf-e-Fatima that's not available for us? It's in the hands of Imam-e-Zaman, and he will bring it down when he comes. Because my friends, here's the secret behind it. Mus'haf-e-Fatima is for a specific purpose, for a specific reason, for a particular reason. That reason will not happen, will not come into existence until Imam-e-Zamana comes. That reason is not going to happen until the Imam comes. So now what is that reason that this has been given in his hand and is not for us, that's not existing right now, it will only happen when Imam will come. What is that one reason, what is that one thing that we don't have right now that we will have when Imam-e-Zamana comes? I'm leading you up to it. What is it? My friends, the one thing that will be different in the time of Imam-e-Zamana that we don't have right now is that there's going to be a global government. There's going to be a global government that is not existing right now. Now we can make up our Islamic government wherever we have the chance to. But it's not going to be global until Imam comes back. When the Imam comes back, it's going to be a global government, where everywhere it's going to be under the government of Imam. When that happens, you see, that is different between our time and the Imam's time. This Mus'haf-e-Fatima is meant for that. That's why it said that the constitution of Imam-e-Zamana's government is Mus'haf-e-Fatima. This is the constitution that he will run the government by. Everything we run according to this. And it is meant for that. That's why it's not in our hands. Allah took it away. So that when the time will come, this will happen. This is, my friends, just an introduction to Fatima. Now let me just speak to you about the reality of Hazrat Fatima for you. And it's mentioned in Suratul Kawthar. Inna a'atayna kal kawthar. Allah tells the Prophet, we have given you Kawthar. What is the translation of Kawthar? Abundance, good. Now, what is the translation of abundance? What's the meaning of abundance? My friends, I want you to think about this, right? Abundance, we say, Allah gave the Prophet abundance. What does abundance mean? A lot, yes. What is a lot? There you go. These are not definitions. These are just similes. Right? Of one thing to another. When we say Kawthar, there has to be certain reality of Kawthar, right? What is this Kawthar? My friends, this is what I just want to explain to you, and inshallah we will go to our ending and conclude the speech, right? And understand this very carefully. Hazrat Fatima has two realities. She has two realities. She has a descending reality. She has an ascending reality. Just like the Quran. The Quran has a descending reality, the Quran has an ascending reality. The descending reality, the Quran, is the form that it came into for us. And Allah says, Inna anzalnahu fi laylatul qadr. We have revealed it, send it down to you. Meaning, this Quran that came to us in this form. This form is a descending form of the Quran. It's not the same as the Quran in heaven. The Quran in heaven is an illuminated form of the Quran. Allah had to bring it down, lower it to our level so that we can comprehend it, that we can take advantage of it. So it came down. This is known as the descending reality of Quran. The ascending reality of the Quran is the illuminated version, the nur that's in the heavens that the Quran is. This is the ascending reality of Quran. Just like that, Fatima has a descending reality and she has an ascending reality. She has an earthly existence, she has a heavenly existence. My friends, the earthly existence or the descending reality of Fatima is that Fatima has been sent as a favor on Rasulullah. If Rasulullah is the greatest of all creation, then Fatima is a minnat. She is a favor on the greatest of all creation. That's why Allah says, Inna a'tainaka al-kawthar, fasalli li rabbika wanhar. I'm giving you this favor, so now you pray. This is a favor of me on you, I'm giving you this. This is the descending reality of Fatima. Now the ascending reality of Fatima, my friends. Send us salawats. And really, I'm not asking you to send all of these salawat so I can get some time off to drink water. The reality is that the teachings and marifat of Ahlul Bayt require light, and that light can be obtained by salawats. The ascending reality of Fatima. My friends, on the Day of Judgment, it is said that Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam will stand. With the alam and the flag in his hand, which is known as the Liwa ul-Hamd, in which it will be written, La ilaha illallah, Muhammadan Rasulullah, Aliyun Waliyullah. And him standing there with that flag written down will be the distinction between those who go to him and those who don't. You know, those who, for example, who will see that, you know, okay, I agree with La ilaha illallah, I agree with Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, but Ali and Waliullah I don't agree with. Okay, you know, they'll go somewhere else, don't worry. And those who agree with that will come to Imam Ali. And they will be the Shia. So they are all going to gather with Imam Ali. They will gather with Imam Ali. On the Day of Judgment, a true Shia, there will be no accounting for him. There will be no hisab for him. Someone who is a Shia, a true Shia, right? There's no accounting for him. Why? Because someone who dies in the love of Ahlul Bayt is a Shaheed. He is actually a Shaheed. And when he dies in the love of Ahlul Bayt, when he's a Shaheed has no questioning. He'll go straight with the Imam and he'll go into heaven. There's no questioning. You ask me why there's no questioning for a Shaheed in Akhirat? Well, here's the thing. I'm not saying that the Imam replied back to this. Someone asked the Imam, why is there no questioning for a Shaheed in Akhirat? Why is he taken and brisked through all the processes of Akhirat and taken to heaven? Why is he not asked the hard questions? Why doesn't he have to answer these questions? So the Imam said, because he answered those questions in this life. All the questions that are going to be asked there, he answered them here. That's why. Why would Allah ask these questions twice? He already gave Allah the answer. Whether it was in the battlefield of jihad or it was in the battlefield of life, he gave the answers here. So when the answers are given, he won't be asked any questions. He will just be raised with Imam Ali. Imam Ali, now obviously it doesn't mean that they were perfect. It doesn't mean they were perfect. They had their defects, they had their flaws, they did their sins, their share of mistakes. Imam Ali is going to take them, and they will go with Imam Ali, and they will go to the gates of heaven, and they will come upon the pond of Kawthar. There, Imam Ali will give them the drink of Kawthar. When Imam Ali gives them the drink of Kawthar and they will drink from the drink of Kawthar, then whatever flaws they have will turn into perfection. Whatever defects they have will be removed. Whatever sins they have will be erased. Whatever ugliness they have will become beautiful. In fact, they will become so beautiful that even Hurul Een will fall in love with them. Right? Hurul Een will fall in love with believers. Right? They will become so good, my friends. And then they will be taken into heaven and they'll go to their respective levels in heaven and their neighborhoods in heaven. And they'll be dropped off there. My friends, I mentioned this briefly, a brief scenario of how the trip is going to be in Akhirat for believers. Now, one question is this. These believers, before they entered heaven and after they entered heaven, they had one stop and that was the pond of Kawthar. When they took from Kawthar and they tasted Kawthar and they took from that, then whatever defects they had were removed. Whatever ugliness they had was changed to beauty, and they were capable, they became capable of entering heaven. My friends, this is the heavenly reality of Fatima, that it is Fatima who makes people capable of going to heaven. What is this Kawthar in Jannat? Kawthar is in Jannat is that anyone who touches it, their ugliness will change to beauty, their imperfections will change to perfections. This is she. This is her reality. She is the one through whom a person becomes capable of Jannat. That is Fatima. And I told you that you are connected to Fatima. You are. Just let me tell you how, my friends. Let me tell you how. You know, just keep this hadith in mind that the Prophet had said, Ana wa Ali abawai hadhil ummah. Me and Ali are the fathers of this ummah, of this nation. Right? Fatima is the mother of this nation. You have either experienced your own mother dying. If not, there will be a time when everyone will have to experience it. Maybe you have seen other people whose mothers have died. The death of a mother is very hard. If there's anyone that any human being is close to in this world, it's his mother. Who has taken care of him more than his mother? Tell me. Who has taken care of him more than his mother? It's his mother that is most dear for us. And when a mother dies, it is an emptiness that's inside of us that, you know, we can feel. You can feel that emptiness that's there. And we cry, and you see people crying, and those whose mothers have died, you cried. And tell me, how much did you cry? A few days? A week? A few weeks? maybe a few months, if you really loved her, if you really were close with one another, maybe a few months, then the most you remember of your mother is what? That you will have an annual majlis for her, in memory of her, so that she can get the reward for it, right? My friends, you're crying for your mother is your reaction to the love that she had for you. How much did your mother love you? You can see it by how much are you crying for her. You cry for her a lot, then we say that, wow, his mother must have loved him so much that look at him, how much he's crying for his mother. He must have loved him so much. But you see, for everyone, this goes away. And really, if you understood that, my friends, I want you to ask yourself this question. And sincerely ask yourself this question. And then try to relate this question to yourself. Just ask this question. Tell me, Fatima, how much did you love us? How much did you love us that even today we are crying for you? I mean, what sort of love have you shown for us that we can't leave your love? Even though Fatima never held you in her hands, she never carried you in her womb, she never caressed you, she never whispered stories to you, your mother did that. But yet, when it comes to our mother, our crying stops. But when it comes to Fatima, every year, every time when Fatima's name is mentioned, something happens to her heart that melts, something happens to her eyes that start shedding tears. So we just have to ask Fatima, how much did you love us? How much did you love us that this is making us go crazy? That every time we remember you, we cry for you. How much did you love us? My friends, this is Fatima's connection to you. This is her connection to you. You know, she loved you so much that when she was going from house to house, knocking on people's door, begging them to open their door so that she can talk to them. Do you know how that felt? I want you to feel it. Just imagine this. If Fatima lived in your city, if she lived in your city and one day she showed up at your door and rang your doorbell, and you open the door and you see Fatima standing, how would you feel? What would you say? Wouldn't you be like ashamed that, my queen, why did you come here? I would have come to you. I would have crawled to your house. Just command me and I'll do that. You came to my house? Imagine how you would react to that. But these were the people of Medina that when Fatima is knocking on their doors, now you see them ignoring her, not opening the door for her. Fatima waiting outside, people looking at Fatima. Also, you are rejected in this house. They don't want to speak to you. They have rejected you. Fatima is going through this treachery. She's going through this hardship for what? She is in love with you because of you. She has gone through it. She wanted the deen to reach you so that you understand one day she's thinking of you when she is going through this. My friends, this is Fatima's love for you. Fatima's trials were so that this deen can reach the ummah of the Prophet. that it can reach you who have not lived with the Prophet, that you can learn of Allah's light. That's why Fatima is going through these hardships. And you know, when she went through that hardship that she's going through, it wasn't easy for her. No, it wasn't easy for her. Because you know what? She's going door to door after the incident of the door happened on her. Yes. After it happened on her. Maybe the young ones here don't know the incident of the door. Let me mention that. Imam Ali was betrayed and wasn't given the power, the people who took power wanted Imam Ali to make bay'at, an allegiance to them, so that they can justify their rule. So the person sitting on the seat of Khilafat sent his servant there, Qanfuz. He came there and he was told that go and tell Ali to appear in the court. He went there, knocked on the door. Fatima answered the door and said, what do you want? He says that the Khalifa has asked for, or he said Amir al-Mu'mineen asked for Ali. So first Fatima replied to that statement. He says, Ali is Amir al-Mu'mineen. How dare you say someone else is Amir al-Mu'mineen? And then she said that, no, he's not coming anywhere. He will not go anywhere. So he went back. He went back, and I'm reading the words from the book of history, translating it for you, so that you can feel and understand what happened of the musibah of Fatima, and give your condolences to the Imam who's crying with you. He went back to the Khalifa, and the Khalifa sent him back and said, go and tell him that if he doesn't come here, we will force him to come here. So he came back and relayed the message, to which the reply was that how dare you threaten the house of the Prophet? This is, you know who this, whose house is this? You know what the Prophet and how the Prophet used to respect the door of this house, and you make these threats over here? No, Ali is not going anywhere. So he came back. And it is said the third or fourth time. So now what happened is that when he came back, and he told the Khalif what happened. The Khalif then, some other people, they said, we will go and make sure that Ali comes. And they all came there as a band of people. They came there as a mob. They came to the door of Fatima. Came to the door of Fatima. And remember, I mean, this door, we know what this door stands for. This door stands for what the Prophet regarded as sacred. And this door stands for something that is beloved in the heart and the eyes of the Prophet. So when they came to the door and they said, open the door or else we are coming in. And when that threat was given, then it is said in this book that is Hayya Fatima, written by one of our ulama in the earliest of ages. He wrote this book, and in that book he says that she then said, no, how can you enter this door by force? How can you enter the door by force? This is the door of Ali and Fatima. This is the door of the daughter of Rasulullah. How dare you even make threats of making this happen? And she was talking to them and they said, move back, we are coming in. Move back, we are coming in. And it is said that one of them came forward and with his leg kicked in the door. He kicked the door in, the door slammed on Fatima, and Fatima fell back. Fatima fell back. No, this wasn't the place where Mohsin was lost. This wasn't the place where Fatima was injured. She just fell back and she felt dizzy. They raided the house. They raided in the house. They came inside the house. They went and looked for Ali and they grabbed Ali. They brought Ali out into the courtyard. They brought him to the courtyard and they were holding his hands and trying to tie him up. Fatima came to me and she came and said, leave Abul Hasan alone. Leave him alone. And they told her to get away. They told her to get away. And then Fatima came to Ali, held his hand and started pulling his hand. She started pulling him to one side. And someone else is pulling Ali on the other side. And then one of them tells the slave, go and take care of her. Just go and take care of her. And when that, you know what that meant? What that meant is that this person went and pushed Fatima. وَدَرَبَهَا بَيَدْهِ And he struck her with his hand. He struck her with his hand. ضَرَبًا شَدِيدًا In a, such a forceful blow that Fatima fell onto the wall. She fell onto the wall, and it's at this time that he went and he kicked the door on top of her. When he kicked the door on top of her, now Fatima was crushed between the wall and the door. She was crushed between the wall and the door. And a shriek came out of her, and then nothing was heard as she slumped to the ground. She slumped to the ground, and they took Ali away. You know, this is happening to Fatima. This is happening to Fatima when her situation is such is that she's 18 years old. She's 18 years old. She is still grieving for her father who just died a few days ago. She is pregnant with her son, with her child. And in this situation, they dealt with her like this. But this is Fatima. This is Fatima, and this is her light, and this is her iman. That when they left and Fatima came out of her unconsciousness, and Asma bint Umais was there, and she looked at Asma. The first thing she asked, Aina Abul Hasan, where is Ali? Where did they take Ali?
سَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلَبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ يَا مَحْمُودُ بِحَقِّ مُحَمَّدٍ يا الله بحق علي يا فاطر السماوات بحق فاطمة يا محسن بحق حسن يا قديم الأحسان بحق حسين oh Allah give us the tawfiq to be on the right paths give us the wisdom to understand your guidance hasten the reappearance of our imam make us his helper when he comes وآخر الدعوان الحمد لله رب العالمين ماتم حسين